can help so many people. And I started to realize that what I actually thought was this huge embarrassing flaw is actually a superpower I have that I can help so many people with. So what I would ask you is, what is your that thing that you're embarrassed about that you feel is like, I can't let anybody see this, and I got to just hide it in the closet that's buried deep in there, right? And own it as a superpower instead of making it an embarrassment.
Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo, and every episode we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey, friends, thank you for joining us for another fun, awkward episode of the On Your Awkward podcast. I'm super excited today because we have Evelyn Knight here, who is an amazing entrepreneur. We just had a chat about that word and jumping into those labels. She's a two-time TEDx speaker and a very empowering woman in business leader. Evelyn, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. I cannot wait to hear about your awkward because that's what we're going to hear in the world. You guys are, I got a sneak peek. Evelyn has got all sorts of awkward stuff and I'm excited about this episode. So, but before we get into that, we'll do that in just a minute. Evelyn, you know, there's just a lot of drama all the time in the world. What's something positive you can tell us about that you see going on?
You know, as ironically, it's kind of sound contradictory, but as an employer, I think that this employment crisis that we're having is actually a good thing. I am the mom of a Gen Z. I think it's Gen Z now, right? And a millennial.
Yeah.
And I know as an employer, we're always complaining about it, right? But I think actually for my kids, I think it's a good thing because really what it is that they're learning to stand in their power and they're demanding more of the workforce. And the employer in me is like, ugh, this is so, you know, because I have to pay payroll. But then the mom and me watching my boy, like, you know what? Good for you. Stand in your power. Good for you guys, like demanding more from your employers. And so, yeah, I think that's there's so much buzz about like, how do we deal with this workforce nowadays? I actually think it's not such a bad thing.
That's such a good perspective. And it's interesting because you are seeing it from both sides. And, you know, I think a lot of times I also am a parent of Gen Z kids, and it's funny to look at what they demand and think, am I jealous because I didn't demand that? Am I bitter because I didn't have that when I was growing up through my early career start? But it's all improving life for everybody over time.
Exactly. And I think that's the bottom line, is it is improving the quality of life. And to a certain extent, us employers, we got to step it up. And so it is, you know, for me, it's a double-edged sword because I love to see this for my children. But as an employer, I'm also like, oh, that means I got to step it up too.
Yeah. So do you have any tips on getting creative in that? Or have you found any secret things that you can give away?
Absolutely. I think one of my superpowers is helping people really understand their purpose in life. And what I've noticed is that people really go through life living an intentional life, but not a purposeful life. And so they think life is good. And a lot of times it is good, but they don't understand that they could have great. So what I've done with my own staff is I help them understand how their job with me is really more of a purpose-driven job. And it's really fulfilling something bigger that's going to outlive them forever. So I'm very good at making my vision contagious.
Wow.
And that is game changer. When your staff understands the power of your vision and they make it their vision, they are lifers. So that's my super.
I love that. And I love that you recognize it as your strength and your ability so that you can lean into it. Because I think as employers, when we hear people talk about having a better workplace and having more fulfillment from work, the basic easy thing to cling to is pay and benefits and all that kind of stuff. And those always, every time they do a study, they always rank, you know, 4 and 5 for reasons why people stay at their job. And the things that people stay for don't actually cost us money
No,
typically.
it doesn't. It
It's
doesn't.
thanks, it's gratitude, it's
Yeah.
feeling like part of the cause.
Yeah, Gallup did a research study last year, so it's post-COVID, and they actually ranked income, I think, was fourth, and then benefits was like seventh. It was somewhere up above five. Fascinating study. And the number one thing that people want in a job is to know that they're making a difference in the world. And so that's what I really cling to. And I have for years. I'm in the childcare industry, and my average employee has been with me for 7 years, and my industry's average is 6 months.
Wow,
So,
that is a true testament to
yep.
your vision and people being on board with it.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that said, we should get awkward, Evelyn. Let's talk about your awkward thing. What is that thing you've had to really own?
So for me, I know we were talking a little bit before we were recording. I feel like I have so many awkwards, right? But lately, what I've been sharing with the world, and I used to be very secretive about it because it is awkward, is that I have suffered from agoraphobia. And for those who don't know, agoraphobia is the fear of basically, in layman's terms, leaving your house. So there was a period in my life where I was so agoraphobic that I did not leave my front door for almost 6 months, and I just stayed trapped inside my house. That was interesting. But now I am a two-time TED Talk speaker. I'm a public speaker. I do it for a living. So I went from literally being trapped inside my house to speaking on stages. I think the biggest stage I've spoken on at this point is 6,000 people. So it's kind of a weird thing. And I'm such an introvert too. So it's easier for me to be in front of a crowd of 1,000 people than it is in a room with five people. So
Okay.
that's my awkward.
Now that is quite a leap, because when you go from I don't feel comfortable leaving the house to I'm
Yes.
talking in front of 6,000 people, I mean, that's just so hard to comprehend, because there's so much to unpack there. But let's start a little bit earlier on. How did you get to that place? Like, was there something that made you move past it? Was there an event or a feeling where you're like, I can't stay in this space?
Definitely. Yes. So there was a moment in my life where I couldn't leave my house at all. It had been a few months, and I am a business owner. My businesses were starting to really suffer. I literally, it got so bad that I had the IRS knock on my front door. And an IRS agent had a very nice bill for me. And I realized I had to do something. Like I had to go and engage in the world again. It had gotten really bad to the point that even telephone calls, things like that, were really difficult for me. So one day I went to leave my house, and I literally put my hand on the doorknob of my front door, and I fell to the ground, and I was hyperventilating. I was just paralyzed. The thought of like just even having my hand on that doorknob, I was on the ground. I had this like out of body experience. It was the weirdest experience of my life. I have a lot of weird experience, but this one was weird. It was almost like a part of me left my body, and I could almost see myself there on the ground. And I could, for the first time during one of these attacks, I could think coherently. And I just remember thinking to myself, you've got to get up. You have to get up. Your family needs you. Your children need you. Your husband needs you. You are going to make your family lose everything if you don't get up off that floor right now. And I finally just got the courage to stand. And it was like, you never realize how hard it is to stand as an adult sometimes until I stood up, opened my laptop, looked up the number for a therapist, called and made an appointment. I called a bunch, actually. The one that could get me in the quickest, I got into. Ironically, that therapist basically told me, diagnosed me with agoraphobia. That was my first diagnosis. And I was seeing her for a little bit, and she basically said, well, this is just how your life is going to be. You have to just learn how to adapt to being this way. And I just remember her saying that to me, thinking, no, That is absolutely unacceptable. And that moment, I made a choice. I made a choice to not be agoraphobic. And I can't say that it was just that easy because I still, every now and then, I can feel the pattern starting. But I made that choice to fight it at least and to start really advocating for me. And that's how I ended up here.
I love that. That whole journey is so beautiful. And one thing that was a surprise to me as you were telling that came out at the very end is you didn't know when you were home that whole time that you hadn't been diagnosed as agoraphobic.
No, I also have narcolepsy. So I knew I had narcolepsy. I knew I had some severe depression, but I had not been diagnosed with agoraphobia. And I can see it throughout my life, like patterns in and out. But it had never been that bad. It had never been like so bad that I couldn't leave my house for 6 months. And there's been other times where I wouldn't have been able to leave without my husband. But then, like, as long as I had him with me, I could leave. This time it was really bad. And so when I got that official diagnosis, and she just kind of said, well, this is your life. You know, this is how it is. We can help you learn things to adapt, but you're going to go through these phases. That's when I thought, not doing it. This is not the life I'm going. And I'm proud to say it's been 12 years.
Wow.
And I just
Excellent.
I have never been stuck like that again. I every time I feel those feelings start to come and I start getting, I just basically tell myself, no, this is not going to happen.
And I think
So
that's so critical to recognize that it's not like we just pack it up and leave it behind and it doesn't ever come with us
yeah.
at all. It's like, no, it's still trying to come along for the ride,
Oh
but
yeah.
you have to fight it and make that choice.
Yes, and I had another experience just 2 years ago. I actually lost my husband 2 years ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. And it was definitely the most difficult experience of my life. We were together for 29 years, and there came another moment in my life. It was about 10 weeks after he passed away. I had set up my businesses so that I knew this time they would be okay, and I wasn't going to have the IRS knock on my front door this time. He was terminal, so we knew it was coming for quite a while. So I had time to prepare. And I looked at my life, and I had been getting myself out, making sure, but I kind of looked around and realized, you know what? I could sell my companies and I don't have to work another day in my life. I'm okay. If I sell, I can stay in this house, pay it off. We had lived in that house for 16 years, and I never have to work another day in my life. And I remember this lady sent me a text or a Facebook message. I don't really even know her. And she just was a widow who reached out to me and said, hey, I just want you to know, I understand. My husband passed away too, and his coffee mug is still sitting where he left it. His clothes are still in the closet. So I had this, I'm like, oh, she gets me. And so I messaged her back and said, I'm so sorry. How long ago did you lose your husband? And she said to me, 8 years ago. And that's when I realized, oh, I can't do this again. I can't do it. And it just kind of all came flooding back. Like, I really saw myself going back into that. I could just stay here. I have enough money. I figured, like, I'm fine. I could just be here forever, just like this. I don't have him anymore as my security blanket. But I just, again, had to really willfully fight those urges and say, no, I'm getting back out into the world and I'm going to live. I'm not going to, I mean, literally just die with him. I just had to make that decision and fight that feeling again.
I mean, it sounds so cliche to say, but it's like he wouldn't want you living like that,
Yes.
you know, and it is a choice. It's like we have this, like our instinct is to go to the comfort and go, okay, I can make this easy. I can stay in this space
Yes.
and I won't have to deal with these things. But you really have to choose, like, okay, when you feel that urge, it's like, am I going to go back into this space? Because I'm choosing to re-enter that room. And I know if I go into that room, it's going to be really hard to get out of.
Yeah, exactly. And it was almost like I had the permission. You know, it
Yeah,
was
you had the
almost
excuse
like
now.
I have the excuse. I have, like, everybody would understand, you know, when you see like somebody who's lost their, and I'm thinking like, and I mean, the thoughts that literally went through my head is nobody would get upset with you. My children are grown now. So I like the kids, the boys don't need you anymore. It's just you. You know, it's okay now. And I just, it was hard because now I had to do it for me. The first time I did it for my family, this time I had to be able to walk out that door for me.
Wow, that's
and it
such
was
a
yeah
good.
it
I
was
love that
definitely
differentiation, because when you were saying that earlier about I have to do this for my family, I think about this sometimes when I talk to people who are in a dark place. It's like, what do you say when they don't have the kid at home relying on them, or the partner, or the person, where you're like, don't do it for them, but there is that difference of you've got to do it for you.
Definitely. And it has been, it's definitely been an awkward journey for me, because I've had to learn what I really had to learn is that I have to have my own back, you know, and we always look for that person who's got your back. Right. And one day I just had this realization, like it literally the thought to occur to me, like, you got to have your own back, you know, like that's the most important thing. So yeah, when you are in that, just that dark, dark place, there comes a time where you're really the only one who can pick you up off the floor. And it's just, and when you realize though, when you get that epiphany that, you know what, I've got my back, it is so freeing. And there's this joy that comes with that. That's like nothing else in this world.
Yeah. So how did other people take that, either the second time or the first time, where it's like, Evelyn, what are you doing? Who are you? Like, you're out and about or whatever. Like, was it a shock? Was it a surprise? Was it oh, no big deal?
Yes, it was very different. The first time, I think I had a lot of people mad at me because there were things falling apart. I mean, so many balls had been dropped and my companies weren't doing well. And there's a lot of, you know, as a business owner, a lot of people relied on me and there's a lot of people's paychecks. And so there was a lot of people who were pretty upset with me at the time and I disappointed them. And so it was a lot more negative. I didn't have a lot of support, I have to say, that first time. And I was very, very secretive. I really, until recently, never really talked about the agoraphobia. I was very ashamed of it, I have to say. So I didn't talk about it. People literally just thought I just checked out.
Yeah, they're not giving you the whole, oh, you had a thing you were dealing with. It's,
no,
what's up, Evelyn? You just dropped the ball on all of us. And so now you're not only facing your own things, but
yes,
all the consequences.
Yeah. And that was really, really hard. And it has taught me tons of lessons on not judging people, because you never know what's happening behind closed doors.
Yeah.
But the second time, everybody was so supportive. And my husband was very well known in our community, very well loved. And so I had so much support, which would have made it so much easier. You know, it's one thing when everyone's disappointed in you and they're just kind of like, come on already.
Yeah.
It's another thing when everybody's just kind of like, it's totally understandable if you just stay shut up in your house for, you know, and then you become this like tragic hero to a certain extent. So I think that one was a little bit more of a struggle, because it would have been easier for me. It would have been very easy for me to fall into that trap of just, you know, embrace the agoraphobia. And I just kept telling myself, like, I would be so happy just alone and not having to face anybody, and the boys could come visit me. And, you know, just all those things, like, I would just be really good if it was just me. So I don't really need to go back to work, and I could just sell, and I never have to leave, and I could just be here, and everybody would accept it.
Right.
So, yeah.
And one of the things that you mentioned earlier, and this is going way back, but you mentioned talking to that first counselor and having them say, this is the thing, you're going to have to deal with it. And it reminded me of, you know, when they say you don't know what kind of choice to make, you flip a coin and you'll know what lands. If you don't like the result, you go the other way. I think we've all experienced that to a degree at some point, where someone says, well, this is what you have to accept. And then we have that choice. Like, no, I'm not accepting that. Okay with me.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder sometimes now if she just kind of did that to motivate. I really don't think so, because she was like preparing me for being just, she was helping my husband too. She would bring him in and help him learn how to get me out of the house. But basically he would be my security blanket. So he would actually come to sessions to help learn how to basically be my security blanket.
Yeah.
So it really did though. That was the spring I needed. Her telling me that was like, no. And I did let her go at that time. And I basically just, but I'm doing this not, and I did get into other therapy, and it took me a couple therapists later to find the right one that really has supported me and helped me. But yeah, that time I was like, not. Yeah.
I can so relate. My first therapist was I should not have hired this person.
Yeah.
But that is, it's like dating. You have to go through a couple renditions to find the right support.
Absolutely. You do. And ironically, my degrees are in psychology. And so I know enough to know that I didn't have the best therapist, and the second therapist placated me all the time. So I kept her around longer than I should have, because she basically told me what I wanted to hear all the time. Oh, so I was like, okay, I like her. And then I realized,
this feels good.
Yeah, exactly. And then one day I just kind of had this realization of, okay, she's not really helping me. Now I got to go get the tough one who's going to give me the tough love and who's going to do the things I actually need. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So I think that can also be like having a good boss or a bad boss. Sometimes mm-hmm. you learn how not to be by having the person who's not ideal in your life in whatever role.
Absolutely. Well, I agree. It's we live, we learn, and it takes some experimenting to find the right people sometimes.
Definitely. So just to shift a little bit here, how did you get on stage? How did that happen?
It kind of happened by accident. So during COVID, I was noticing in the childcare industry, my industry was like facing decimation, and all of the news coming out and the advocacy groups that are out there that are amazing were basically just pleading with Congress, because even after like the PPP loans and everything, they were predicting 80% of childcare centers in the United States were about to get shut down.
Wow.
And it was bad. It was really terrifying for a while for being an owner of a childcare center. And so I was on social media in these childcare owners groups, and I saw just this crazy amount of desperation. The like people were just like, I am losing my business. I had to close. And just knowing from my own personal journey is that like these businesses can't sustain it. Childcare industry is a very scarcity minded industry. Mm-hmm. And it's also they literally live week to week based on tuition. So they don't have cash flow. It's not a very profitable industry. So I knew that the industry was in trouble. And so I literally just started going live on Facebook and YouTube every day just to encourage people. I literally just like started going live saying, you guys, we're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And next thing you know, I have a 3,000 person following like overnight. Mm-hmm. And I went live every day for over a month, and then I started getting tired. So I started going weekly, and then I started a podcast. And it really was for that first year, it was really just to encourage them to keep going, not to give up, not to quit. I really got into advocating for childcare, for quality early child education. And then it just led. I started a coaching company early on, where there were so many people saying, hey, we need your help. I actually started more of a membership. I had so many people coming and asking me to work with me that I didn't have enough time to do one-on-one clientele anymore. So I started doing group coaching. And next thing you know, I have this company that basically helps childcare owners and directors learn how to run a healthy business.
Nice.
And then I started getting asked to speak on behalf of childcare. And then after my husband passed away, I started kind of just kind of naturally started speaking for women and advocating for women standing in their power and different things like that. So it literally kind of fell into my lap, where just standing up and speaking out for what I believe in turned into, hey, can you come speak for me? And so, kind of just happened.
Well, and the irony that here in this time of world and national and crisis just across the board, mm-hmm. there's this, and not to lead with all the labels, but it's like, okay, if no one's going to stand up and say what needs to be said, the agoraphobic, introverted right. It's going to be the one that's like, hey, y'all, this is so important. We need to say this.
Yes. Yes. And I've literally, like, at this point, when I started my podcast, I didn't know any of this was going to happen. I was perfectly happy with my child care centers that I own here in Northern Nevada. I had no idea it was going to turn into this. I have an international customer base at this point. And exactly, here I was, this agoraphobic girl, I mean, woman, I guess, by then. And it just was like, suddenly I have all these people looking to me, asking me for help, saying like, hey, I will pay you to work with me. So next thing, and since we talked about, like, I am a serial entrepreneur, I was like, ooh, new business. Okay, let's do this.
Time to start that up.
Time to start every opportunity, right? So I did start that up, and I am such an advocate for early childhood education that I used it as an opportunity to help improve quality of ECE in the United States, which has been awesome, because I've really been able to spread the word on how do you have a very high quality preschool program that also provides childcare. So, and that's what I'm most passionate about. So it's really just helped me to step into that passion. But yeah, if you would have told me 13 years ago when I was laying on the ground, I would have never believed you.
And I think sometimes, like, it's important that our journey is revealed a little bit at a time, because if when you were laying on the ground, it said you're going to speak in front of 6,000 people, that's
Yeah,
what
no.
puts you over the edge.
Yeah, I would have just been like, okay, I quit now. The IRS come and take everything. Yeah, I
Yeah, just
just, yeah.
have it.
Yeah, and it's crazy because now, and when I first started, I wasn't as casual about it as I am now, obviously. And it, thank God, I have to say, everything works out for a reason, because when I started, it was Zoom. You know, I would go and speak on Zoom, and it's easy enough just to put the screen where it's just you and you don't see anyone else. So it's pretty easy. Even my first TED Talk was a Zoom TED Talk, because that's how they were doing it. So it wasn't so difficult at the time, as like my first time on a stage. And so transitioning from like the world is open again and we're doing these live events, we'd like you to come speak, was definitely a transition for me.
You're like, now here comes another test.
Yes. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just something I've embraced. And I know I believe everything happens for a reason. And when you really just follow that flow of life, it just it lines up the way it's supposed to. So I know I am where I'm supposed to be, and everything is lined up just the way it should.
Definitely. That
Yeah.
is awesome. Now, we have links in the notes, so if you're listening to this and driving, don't worry about like taking this down or anything. But Evelyn, between all the things you're doing, what is the best way for people to support you? How can they help you and get behind what you're doing?
Well, definitely follow me on social media. I do a lot, and I am branching out a lot. I'm right now where basically the universe or is taking me is I'm been asked by a lot of people to help them learn how to start their own like mastermind type of programs and how to get on stages. So I'm starting a new venture where I am helping people to learn how to find their voice. It's exactly it. My new venture is actually called The True Value of Your Voice. And I basically take my experience of almost losing my voice to the world and gaining it again, and teaching people how do you take your experiences and bring it to the world to help improve the world. So you can find everything on my website, evelynknight.com. And just absolutely follow me. I love and appreciate it. Every Monday I go live and just give some kind of word of encouragement and just trying to help people with their mindset and really just to stand in their own power.
So since you've moved from getting through your shift and having to empower yourself, have you found that there is a constant thread or something that you run into with other people where it's like recurring, you keep hearing the same thing?
Yeah, you know what it really comes down to, I think, is just this belief system that people, it's like the world we live in. And my coach that helps me, I have a performance coach and he's amazing. His name is Tony Child. I got to give him credit. He taught me something that really, it's like it was my, oh my gosh, that's what it is. He basically teaches that there's two different types of frames of mind in this world. There's those who think you live in a hostile world or a friendly world. And the people who think we live in a hostile world basically live in that lane of scarcity, of lack. There's not enough money. There's not enough resources. There's not enough happiness. And when am I going to get mine type of an attitude. And the people who live in a friendly world understand that there is an abundance of everything in this world. And they understand there's enough love and money and everything to go around to everybody in a very rich sort of way. And I think that's the biggest thing I run into when I'm speaking to people who ask me, how did you do this? It's really that mindset. They live in a hostel, and I did. I was there. I lived in a hostel world during the time where it was a scary world. And I had to literally have a paradigm shift where I realized it's not so bad. And there is so much good out there.
Right.
That really changed everything for me.
I love that you point out that you were in that space, because I know people who think both those ways. And I have great friends on both sides, and I know that I just don't engage as much with the hostile-minded people because I'm friends with them because of whatever history have, but I'm not living in that same space that they are. But I have also been in that space where, you know, you think, oh, you either are this person or you're this person, yet the reality is you can shift from one to the other. Yes. And you can go backwards too. So we have to be careful of that.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I think you have to be conscious and talk about awkward, right? When you go through that shift, which it's the same thing as like having that victim mentality.
Mm-hmm.
So I was definitely a victim, absolutely a victim. And that's when I was living in the hostile world. So now having that shift, that's where it gets awkward, because there are those people in your life. You surround yourself with the people who are like you and think like you, right?
Yeah.
So now suddenly, you still have all these people in your life and they still live in that hostile world. And suddenly now you live in this friendly world and you're like, oh boy, what do I do with these guys now?
Yeah.
And some of them are family. There's some people that you love dearly, and it's so awkward. Thanksgiving, right? Like we just, the holidays, Christmas, everything, we go through these holidays and it's like, you're in that world, right? Mm-hmm. Between the hostile and the friendly world. And it's transitioning from one to the other is definitely another area that I can own my awkward.
Now, do you ever get tempted to go back into that hostile mentality?
Oh yeah. Ironically, I just had a call earlier today with my performance coach. And one of the things that he has me like write down in my mirrors and everything is like, I need to be, because I live sometimes in this, I got to do, and, you know, make things happen instead of allowing everything to happen for me. I think I have to make it happen.
Yeah.
And so, I do get tempted to go back down that rabbit hole, but I just remind myself all the time and just course correct a lot.
Yeah. I've come to see it as, instead of it's that I'm back in that space, it's that it's just part of the journey or part of the process. Like, oh, I look forward to this mindset passing, and I have some tricks I do that it's like, okay, I'm not gonna stay here. I'm not moving in. I'm just visiting this house for a little bit, but I'm not taking the key.
Exactly. And it's basically, so my background in psychology, I actually studied neurology. And I never practiced. I basically, when I was studying it, I decided, you know, why do we fix broken adults instead of just trying to help children from the get-go, which is why I ended up in early childhood education. But so I look at it from that realm too, from a neurological perspective, where we can rewire our brains, but it is so easy for us to fall back into those old patterns. There is that subconscious that just keeps wanting to bring us back there. Mm-hmm. So it is really taking charge and being conscious and aware and just keeping yourself in check. And I like to call it, like, I do some intentional brainwashing on myself.
Well, if it's intentional and it's your choice, that's fair. Right. Right?
It's healthy brainwashing. Yes.
I love that. Healthy brainwashing. I'm going to remember that. That's such a good... a good hack,
right?
Perfect. Yeah. So is there anything else you want to make sure that we promote before I ask you for some advice?
Oh, I think just promoting my new course would be great. We are launching a new course in February. I am also launching a new course to help people learn how to get into that mentorship realm. I think, like, I like to joke, I've been a coach before coaching was trendy. Now it's trendy to become a coach. So really understand there's a difference between mentoring and coaching. I think there's a lot of confusion. And if you're doing it for business and you're going to teach, that's mentoring. you know, and if you want to be coaching where you actually ask a lot of questions and let people find their own, that's coaching. But I am actually focusing more on the mentoring, and I'm going to be helping people launch their own mentorship, whether it's through group like I do or one-on-one mentorship. So all of it. And then of course the speaking course, if you have a story that you know the world needs to hear, I want to help people get their foot in the door and get started, because we need more positive voices out in the world for sure.
I love that. Excellent. Evelyn, this has been so insightful. I've learned so much. I'm going to ask you for either a challenge or some advice you'd leave our audience with on how they can own their awkward.
Ooh, to challenge or advice. Let's see. How about a challenge? Let's do.
All right. Go for it. How would you challenge people this week to own their awkward?
What I would challenge you is, a lot of times the thing that you think is your biggest flaw can sometimes be your superpower. So for me, I was so ashamed of the fact that I was agoraphobic, and I hid it for years. I didn't tell anybody. And now that I'm coming out with my story and letting the world see my vulnerability, I can help so many people. And I started to realize that what I actually thought was this huge embarrassing flaw is actually a superpower I have that I can help so many people with. So what I would ask you is, what is your, that thing that you're embarrassed about, that you feel is like, I can't let anybody see this, and I got to just hide it in the closet that's buried deep in there, right? And own it as a superpower instead of making it an embarrassment.
I love that. Put it on like a cape and don't use it like a blanket to hide under, right?
Right. Exactly. Yes. Don't hide under it, but help use it to really just propel you instead of holding you back. A lot of those things that we really just kind of hide away can actually propel us and not hold us back. So just own it.
I love that. Evelyn, thank you so very much. I cannot wait to see more and more from you and watch as your speaking courses take off, and also see more of you on stage.
Thank you, Andy.
And everybody else, be sure you go out there this week. Take that thing that you're hiding in the closet, like Evelyn said, own it, make it propel you into the future. And as always, own your awkward.
Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.